Khoonie, The Crimes of India is a thoroughly researched podcast that uses publicly available documents, reports, and books and associated media to provide listeners with a complete picture of the week's case. The following content is often graphic and regularly uncomfortable. Mentions of assault, bodily harm, and death may follow. Khoonie, The Crimes of India does not condone any actions mentioned in the episode. Minors are advised to exercise caution before proceeding. Thank you.
Two. Honorable Prime Minister Shri Atal Bihari Vajpayee, Government of India. Subject: Request for probe into rape of hundreds of girls by Dera Chief Gurmeet Ram Rahim. I'm a girl hailing from Punjab, and I've been serving as a sadhvi at the Dera Sacha Sauda, Sirsa, Haryana, for the last 5 years. There are hundreds of other girls who serve for 16, 18 hours a day at the Dera. We are being physically exploited here. Dera Maharaj Gurmeet Singh rapes girls at the Dera. I'm a graduate. My family members are blind followers of Gurmeet Ram Rahim. I became a sadhvi at my family's bidding. 2 years after I became a sadhvi, Maharaj Gurmeet Singh's close women disciple, Gurjot, told me one night around 10 p.m. that I had been summoned to his gufa or his residence. As I was going there for the first time, I was elated. I was elated because God himself had sent out for me. When I went upstairs, I saw the Maharaj sitting on the bed, holding a remote control in hand and watching a blue film on TV. Beside his pillow on the bed lay a revolver. Seeing all this, I was stunned. I felt dizzy. And I felt as if the earth had moved from beneath my feet. I wondered what at all was happening here. I had never imagined that Maharaj would be such a person. He switched off the TV and seated me beside him. He offered me water and said that he had called me because he considered me very dear to him. This was my first day. Maharaj took me in his arms and said that he loved me from the core of his heart. He also said that he wanted to make love to me. He told me that at the time of becoming his disciple, I had dedicated my wealth, body, and soul to him, and he had accepted my offering. By this logic, my body was his now. When I objected, he said, "There is no doubt that I am God." When I asked if God would also indulge in such acts, he shot back, "Krishna too was God, and he had 360 gopis or milkmaids with whom he staged Prem Leela or love drama. Even then, people regarded him as God. This is not a new thing. Second, I can kill you. I can kill you with this revolver and cremate you here. The members of your family are my devoted followers and they have such blind faith in me that they are my slaves. You know it very well that your family members cannot go against me. And third, I have considerable influence in the governments. The chief ministers of Punjab and Haryana and central ministers touch my feet. Politicians seek my support and take money from me. They cannot take any action against me. We will get your family members dismissed from government jobs. I will get them killed, and I wouldn't leave any evidence behind. You know it very well that I got Dera manager Fakir Chand killed earlier. No one knows anything about him till date. Neither is there any evidence of the murder. With my money power, I can buy politicians, police, and justice." Thus, he raped me. For the past 3 months, my turn comes every 25 to 30 days. Now I realize that he has been raping other girls staying with him. There are many women living at the Dera, and some of them are between 35 to 40 years old, past the marriageable age. They have compromised with their lives at the Dera. Most of the girls are educated, have secured bachelor's, master's, and B.Ed. degrees. But they are living a life of hell at the Dera because their family members are fanatic followers. We wear white clothes, cover our heads with scarves. We are forbidden to look at men, and we have to keep a distance of 5 to 10 feet from men as per Gurmeet's commands. We appear like devis. Devis are pious women. But our situation is that of prostitutes. I once tried to tell my family members that it was all that all was not well at the Dera. But they got angry with me, saying that if God's company is not worth enjoying, then which place would be? They told me that my mind has become corrupt, and they told me to recite the name of Sadguru, the real teacher. I'm helpless. I have to obey every command of the Maharaj.
No girl is permitted to talk to another. As per the commands of the Maharaj, girls are not permitted to talk to their families, even over telephone. If a girl talks about the reality of the Dera, she is punished under the commands of the Maharaj. Just a few days ago, a Bhatinda girl spoke about the wrongdoings of the Maharaj. She was thrashed by women disciples. She is still bedridden at her home due to this assault. Her father has left his service as a sevadar, servant of Dera. She's not telling anyone anything for the fear of Maharaj. Similarly, a girl from Kurukshetra district has also left the Dera and went back home. When she narrated her sufferings at the Dera to her family, her brother, who worked as a sevadar, gave up his job. When a Sangrur girl left the Dera and went home and narrated the wrongdoings at the Dera to the people, the Dera's armed sevadar hooligans visited the girl's home and threatened to kill her. They warned her not to tell anyone anything about the Dera. Similarly, girls from Mansa, Firozpur, Patiala and Ludhiana districts of Punjab have gone back home and are keeping mum as they have threat to their lives. Same is the fate of the girls from Sirsa, Hisar, Fatehabad, Hanumangarh and Meerut, who are not uttering a word due to the muscle power of the Dera Gundas. If I reveal my name and my address, my family and I will be killed. I can't keep quiet and I also don't want to die, but I want to expose the reality of Dera. If a probe is conducted by the press or some government agency, 40 to 45 girls living in utmost fear at the Dera, if they are convinced, are willing to tell the truth. Our medical examination should be conducted so that our guardians and the people would know whether we are still celibate disciples or not. If we are no longer virgins, it should be probed as to who violated our chastity. The truth will then come out that Maharaj Gurmeet Ram Rahim Singh of Sacha Sauda has ruined our lives. Namaste, Namaskaram. Welcome to our final episode in the Dera Sacha Sauda series. In the last episode, we discussed how Ram Rahim took over the Dera and made it into a multi-million rupee enterprise. And this was a far cry from its humble origins as a simple non-sectarian commune for meditation and self-improvement. Also, as you all know, I'm Sneha. I'm in Hyderabad, still very much sitting in quarantine, and across me, today on WhatsApp video call, I have Aditi. What's up, dude?
Hey, hi. Welcome to Khuni, everybody. And I would just like to tell all of our listeners that this episode is particularly cursed. I don't know what happened, guys. This is the third time we are recording this episode. I think this morning we tried recording at 3:13, right?
Yeah, you woke me up at 3:30. We started recording at about 4. Yeah.
4. Yeah, yeah. This is the level of our commitment to this podcast. the least you guys can do is, you know, tell a friend about us.
Yeah, man. Least. Mm-hmm. That is the least. Like, we expect you, all of... I'm sure a lot of the... You are already following us wherever you listen and you've subscribed. But next time, I think you should start recruiting.
Yes, absolutely. Actively recruiting. And I would also like to point out that Sneha is in Hyderabad and I'm in Lucknow, and both cities experiencing temperatures, you know, in late 30s and 40s. And we are sitting and recording this without any fans and without air conditioners.
Yeah, and in Aditi's case, in a cupboard, and in my case, in a small storeroom. So,
yeah. I'm literally, I've kept my laptop inside my cupboard. I've covered myself up with a blanket just to accentuate the torture and get as clear a sound as possible. So yeah, we are going through hell for this podcast, but we're loving it. We're not trying to make you feel guilty or anything.
This is cool. It's workout, okay? It's like sitting in a sauna because I can't go workout and she can't go workout anyway.
No.
So, yeah, we're doing this sauna experiment.
Also, no pain, no gain.
Say whatever you have to keep yourself happy.
Yeah, we're just saying all of this because we want you to feel at least a smidge guilty. A smidge, not a lot, just a smidge. So you will at least tell one friend about us. That's all.
Yeah, right. Anyway, let's get back. Let's not get carried away. So guys, just to recap, we have so far learned about the money laundering, extortion, murders, castrations, and private militia. Oh my God. Raised by Gurmeet Ram Rahim. We have learned how he hid behind the many hospitals, orphanages, schools, colleges, and numerous charity events like blood donation drives. Also, how he managed to cultivate this weird persona of the Baba of Bling with his eclectic clothing choices and accessories and his movies and weird-ass songs. And the whole point of this was to create a larger-than-life persona. Basically distract people from his nefarious activities and the activities that Dera was involved in beneath the surface. And for a very long time, this whole charade actually worked. The thing is, national media is driven by TRPs. And this whole TRP game is a very dangerous thing. National media does not give a fuck about what is happening in a small town like Sirsa, tucked away somewhere in Haryana. What it cares about is a so-called Baba making an absolute fool of himself on primetime television for all to see. So you'll see a lot of interviews conducted by news outlets just casually interviewing Gurmeet about his many movies, his songs, etc. Like, there are videos out there debating whether mocking his movies makes us elitist or not. My opinion is... mocking TikTok videos is elitist, okay? You can do whatever the fuck you want to Gurmeet's videos. They're disgusting. And basically, for the longest time, Gurmeet was a media darling until very recently, in fact. And this matters because it was this benign image that the media was helping create was also covering up his entire sinister crimes, including against media's very own.
The letter we opened with was written anonymously by a female member of the Dera. It surfaced way back in May of 2002 in Sirsa when it was published by a local journalist, Ram Chandra Chhatrapati, in his newspaper, Pura Sach, which in English means the complete truth. In many ways, Ram Chandra Chhatrapati was one of the first few to vocally raise his voice against Gurmeet. And we cannot stress just how dangerously bold it was to publish this letter, at least in Sirsa. You have to understand, Dera is a big deal in Sirsa. The influence of Dera Sacha Sauda does not end within the perimeter of Dera's compound. The whole town was in Gurmeet's grip. In the previous episode, we had mentioned how Gurmeet had ordered many followers to leave their native places and settle down in Sirsa. And yeah, this move was now paying dividends. His photos hung in the homes and businesses of locals, most of whom belonged to Dera Sacha Sauda. This included the police, local administration, and even certain sections of the press. In the previous episode, we also talked about how Gurmeet was forging political alliances. This is why, despite the town being abuzz with all kinds of nasty rumors, nothing seemed to stick to Gurmeet.
Yeah, he totally reminds me of a mafioso.
He is a mafioso. He is basically running Sirsa. I mean, even leaves don't rustle in Sirsa without Gurmeet finding out about it. I mean, that was the level of control. This is why when we say that Ramchandra Chhatrapati did a bold thing by publishing the letter, we damn well mean it. Another local newspaper had also published the full letter. The offices of this newspaper were ransacked and its editor had to go underground. And this paper wasn't even based in Sirsa. It published from a neighboring district. Chhatrapati wrote about this attack as well. The Punjab and Haryana High Court took suo motu cognizance of the letter in September 2002.
Okay, guys, I'll just explain what this whole thing means really quickly. Generally, when a crime takes place, the complainant files an FIR, that is the first information report, with the police, which sets off the entire investigation in motion. However, in some cases, the court can direct the police to file complaint even when no complainant is coming forward, which can be for many reasons, like fear for their lives, fear of stigma, etc. And this is called suo motu cognizance.
Right. So we can see that Gurmeet could feel the heat. The vandalization of that other media office showed that he was nervous, and Gurmeet was now planning a full-scale escalation. On 24th October 2002, Ramchandra Chhatrapati had an unusual day at work. He came home earlier than usual to find his oldest son, Anshul, chopping vegetables for dinner for his two younger siblings. Their mother was out of town. Just a usual day, right? But Anshul was a little surprised. After all, his father almost always stayed at his office late. And then when he did come back home, he spent some time at the local tea shop nearby chatting with his friends. This would go on till late in the night. But today, Chhatrapati was home by 7 p.m. He told his son that he had had a major lead in the Dera Sacha Sauda investigation. About an hour later, they heard someone call out Ram's name from the lane just outside their house. Now, Ram knew the risks of his profession and also of doing a story on Dera Sacha Sauda. He was always careful. He told his kids to stay inside the house no matter what and went outside himself to check who had been calling out his name. First, he made sure that no one was standing near the gate of his house, and once satisfied, he went outside onto the road. All this while, Anshul had been inside, and when he did not hear anything for several minutes, he was concerned and he started to go outside to see for himself. He had barely managed to open the front gate when he heard the gunshots. His father had been shot 5 times by 2 men on a bike and was now lying in a pool of blood on the road. Neighbors quickly gathered around and rushed them to the hospital in Sirsa. But the local hospital did not have sufficient means to treat gunshot wounds. So the family had to drive almost 200 kilometers to another bigger hospital. Once there, Chhatrapati was in and out of consciousness over the next several days. Meanwhile, one of his attackers had been captured by the police while the other one had fled. A sub-inspector from Sirsa visited Chhatrapati in the hospital to record his statement. Now remember in the very beginning, when we said that Gurmeet had complete control over the police and local administration in Sirsa, you will now see just how much control.
Chhatrapati had been lucid when the sub-inspector had visited the hospital and was able to give a statement. In his statement, he clearly named Gurmeet Ram Rahim as the person behind his attack. Anshul, however, said that when he saw the report of the sub-inspector, while still in the hospital, there was no mention of Gurmeet. He even questioned the sub-inspector about it, who gave him a dubious answer about how this was just a draft and he would write a detailed report later. And in that, he would definitely include Gurmeet's name. Obviously, the sub-inspector did not include Gurmeet's name. Chhatrapati died on 21st November 2002 after slipping into a coma. This was officially a murder investigation now. This whole charade would come to light 5 years later during the CBI inquiry into Gurmeet. This sub-inspector was subjected to a polygraph test, which he failed. Okay, now we know that polygraph tests are unreliable, but there is plenty of corroborating evidence that points at Gurmeet's involvement. For example, the murder weapon was a revolver and was licensed to a member of the Dera. One of the two assailants confessed to being a member of the Dera. They had used a walkie-talkie when they had been surveilling Chhatrapati, and guess what? This walkie-talkie was also licensed to the Dera. There was a lot to link the crime directly to the Dera. And this was also probably the first time that there was a serious pushback in Sirsa against Gurmeet Ram Rahim. Look, Chhatrapati had been well known in Sirsa. He was an idealist to the core. Before becoming a journalist, he had been a human rights lawyer. He wrote a lot on important issues in local newspapers. And publishing this letter was not the first time he had butted heads with the Dera Sacha Sauda and Gurmeet Ram Rahim. It had happened many, many times before. He had even gone undercover inside the Dera to gather evidence. Anurag Tripathi, in his book on Gurmeet, states that Chhatrapati named his newspaper Pura Sach, or The Complete Truth, in defiance of the Dera's own publication called Sach, which meant truth. It was his way of sticking it to this cult. After he passed away, his wife had this to say. He always told us that no one has left this earth alive. Neither will I. But I can't sit back and see my city go to ruin because of Gurmeet Ram Rahim. So when people in Sirsa heard about this murder, they could barely contain their anger. His friends from the bar, journalists, and common people all gathered to protest his brutal murder. This was a first for Gurmeet and the Dera. Like we said before, Dera was all pervasive in Sirsa. You could not escape it. So this outcry was a watershed moment and was a major boost to the investigation. But there were many obstacles as well. In the previous episode, we had talked about Khatta Singh, who testified but later turned hostile in the murder investigation of Fakir Chand, the manager of the Dera. Khatta Singh had also testified in the murder of Chhatrapati as well, but Gurmeet got to him soon enough. Khatta Singh turned hostile. He made a lot of allegations against the CBI, like they were threatening him and that they had basically forced the confession out of him. This proved to be a major setback in the case. Chhatrapati's son Anshul had to fight a long battle for justice, but in January 2019, his father's killers were convicted. Four people were held guilty, with Gurmeet being named the main conspirator.
Now let us come to the story behind the letter itself. And while not a single story in this entire clusterfuck has been even remotely uplifting, this one is definitely the worst of them all. The Dera had many female members, both married and unmarried. The female members were called Sadhvi. Sadhvi means nun in English. Most of the female members were housed in separate hostels. And here is the icky part. The hostels were connected to Gurmeet's quote-unquote gufa by an underground passage. And the ordeal narrated by the writer of the letter at the beginning of the episode was pretty much universal.
See, I told you we had a sex dungeon. Fuck, even fitted with a tunnel. This is just disgusting on so many levels.
Yeah, and by the way, I've heard that this tunnel was brightly lit with like psychedelic lights and everything. Yeah. And it also had air conditioning and everything. It was insane. Just insane. Okay, now we already know from the previous episode that Gurmeet was convicted of rape. Officially, he has only been charged in 2 cases. So, from among God knows how many, we only have 2 victims on record. Their names have never been disclosed. So, we will be calling them Victim 1 and Victim 2 during this episode. Anurag Tripathi, during his investigation into the Dera, spoke to one of the sadhvis who was employed as a teacher in the Dera school. Let's call her Victim 1. She told a harrowing story of how one day she had been pulled from her usual duties in the Dera and asked to, quote, guard, unquote, the entrance to Gurmeet's room.
Why the fuck? I mean, why? Why was a lady guarding Gurmeet's room? Didn't he have a private militia? Didn't he have the fucking police in his blingy pockets?
Yeah. Obviously this was a ruse and it was a cruel one at that. So Victim 1 said that she did as she was told. But one day, she saw another girl exit Gurmeet's room crying. The girl seemed to be in a lot of pain. And when the sadhvi asked the young girl what happened, the girl could only say that Gurmeet was a bad man. She just could not bring herself to say out loud what had been done to her. Victim 1 also said that she had witnessed the same thing happening to other girls as well during the time she was on guard outside his room. So you can see why this was so cruel. I mean, she was being made to see this preview of what she herself would eventually go through at some point. And the moment seemed more and more imminent. A lot of older sadhvis in the Dera would playfully ask her if she had been granted maafi yet. Maafi means forgiveness.
His code word for rape was maafi, really? And yeah. Did you just use the word playfully? Like, what the fuck? And the older sadhvis were playfully asking her if she had been raped?
Yep.
What? Like, I can't believe I just said that sentence.
And yes, I just
threw up a little in my mouth. And I can still... Ugh, I can't ever use the word maafi now without thinking about all of this. Thank God my Hindi sucks. And lastly, why the fuck were they called sadhvis? Like, what is even happening?
Yeah, they should. At least these women should not have been called sadhvis.
Hang on, I think Aditi, just explain what is sadhvi here, because I don't know, and I want people to know, because I'm a little confused. Okay.
Right. So sadhvi is basically a nun. A sadhvi is somebody who has given up all worldly possessions and her family and close ties, friends. And she has basically moved into this religious organization to serve that organization. All she does is pray and, you know, whatever task she has been assigned. Basically what nuns do in a church, in a convent, sorry.
Right, got it.
Gurmeet had 2 types of hardcore supporters. One type knew about all his misdeeds, but didn't think of them as misdeeds. For example, all the men killing for him and all these sadhvis normalizing rape culture within the Dera.
Okay, and I'm assuming that the second type was just blissfully unaware.
Oh, not just blissfully unaware, but stubbornly refusing to believe that their pitaji or father could do anything wrong even.
Doesn't Pitaji mean, quote-unquote, daddy? This series is ruining so many Hindi words for me.
Yeah, me too, same. So for reference, see the outrage in Panchkula after his conviction, okay? Also, many of the sadhvis who had been raped tried telling their families about it and begged to leave the Dera. Too many of them were not even believed. To discredit them, Gurmeet would tell their families that the girls were leveling all these false allegations against him because they couldn't handle the discipline of the Dera. Some women's characters were assassinated by saying that they had tried sneaking in their boyfriends inside the Dera, and when they were caught, they were cooking up all these false stories. A lot of the raped women who had escaped the Dera were sent back by their families. Also, just to give you people a sense of how brainwashed some Dera members were, some of the women were actually told by their family members that since Gurmeet was God himself, what was the harm in sleeping with God? Yes.
No.
Actual no. statement said to the women in their family Shut who up. Had been raped. Yes.
Shut up, Arati. No. Stop it. What are you saying?
It was in the letter, right? The woman also mentioned this in the letter. It's unbelievable to me. But yeah.
Look, Gurmeet, whatever he thought was not God. He's just a up and walking advertisement for wheat hair removal cream. That's all he was.
Yes. Anyway, coming back to victim one. She was summoned into Gurmeet's lair sometime in 1991. By this time, she had been on guard duty for a few months. He had called her inside, and then he started asking her about her life before the data and whether she was happy with the data now. After making this inane small talk, he asked her to confess to him all the mistakes she had ever made in her life.
Kuch bhi.
Yeah. So, after, remember in the last episode, we saw zakat being borrowed from Islam. Now you see a little bit of confessional from Catholicism. But this is about to get very weird. This was obviously a bizarre request, and the Sadhvi struggled to think of an answer. Also, by this time, she was uncomfortably remembering the words of the older Sadhvis, how they had asked her whether she had received Gurmeet's forgiveness yet. And while her mind was racing, Gurmeet produced a letter addressed to her by some boy. It was the kind of cheesy nonsense young boys write to their crushes when they are too scared to talk to them. You know, we've all gotten one at some point. And he went on to blame the Sadhvi for encouraging this boy or seducing him. The Sadhvi clarified that this was just some boy in her school and it meant nothing. She wasn't having an affair. But it seems that Gurmeet had latched on to this. So he told her that the outside world had made her impure and that as a spiritual guru, he was going to make her pure again. He used that pretext to rape her. She lived with that trauma for about a year when she was summoned once again. This time she refused to go. But the manager of the data who had been sent to fetch her threatened to withhold food until she obliged. In fact, this is a tactic that was used on many other women in the data. They would be starved for days until they realized that they had no other choice and submit to Gurmeet's demands. So this Sadhvi had to go as well. She tried everything she could to prevent the rape. She threatened to tell her brother, who was also a data member, but Gurmeet simply told her that he would have him killed and have his body buried and no one would even know.
Yeah, like what happened to Fakir Chand, guys? His murder, in fact, is still unresolved.
Yeah. So he also told her that he had all these political connections. He knew top bureaucrats. He was basically strong-arming her into silence. Even so, she told her brother about what happened. This brother's name was Ranjit Singh. He was heartbroken when he found out what had happened to his sister. He had been one of the core members of the data. He was influential. He was a close aide of Gurmeet. He also had a daughter who was completing her graduation in one of the colleges the data had established. Ranjit had said to his sister that it would have been better if they'd all been worshipping a stone rather than this man who claimed to be God. Eventually, he took his sister and daughter away from the data.
Now, victim number two was another Sadhvi or nun at the Dera. She was a third generation Dera member in her family. So her family's association with the Dera was very strong. And like the first victim, she too had been assigned guard duty outside Gurmeet's room from 8 to 12 in the night. One day, she was summoned inside by Gurmeet. Unlike victim one, it seems that she had no idea about what might transpire inside. Gurmeet was sitting on the bed. She went in and sat down on the floor like all the Dera members did in Gurmeet's presence. But he asked her to sit next to him. Then he repeated the same charade he had done with the previous victim. He asked her about her life before the Dera. Was she happy in the Dera? Were any of the other Sadhvis giving her any trouble? And after this, he started to touch her. She was completely taken aback and resisted him as best as she could. But it was of no use. He forced himself on her. In her statement, the victim talks about how she was weeping after he was done, and he had threatened her just like he had threatened victim number one and God knows how many other women before and after them to remain silent. He bragged about his connections. He told her he could have her family killed, and she knew he was right. She did tell her family the next time they visited her, and they promptly took her home. Sometime later, she got married to a man who was a member of the Dera. And get this, her marriage, like most other marriages between Dera members, was solemnized by Gurmeet himself. Oh, I can't even imagine or even understand the mortification she must have gone through during the ceremony. And both these incidents happened pre-2002 when the letter was published by Chhatrapati. From what I've read, the letter was probably written sometime in 2000. It had been circulating in Sirsa for a while before newspapers picked it up. Chhatrapati publishing it in 2002 was basically adding fuel to the fire. It was the first time Gurmeet had probably felt scared, and hence the hit on Chhatrapati. But what we didn't mention earlier was that Chhatrapati wasn't the only casualty in 2002. In July 2002, another man was murdered at the behest of Gurmeet Ram Rahim. Gurmeet had been enraged when the letter came out in the open. All those threats he had made to the victims weren't empty. He meant every single word. See, no one knew who had written the letter. It was anonymous. But Gurmeet suspected victim number one. He thought it was Ranjit Singh, her brother, who had orchestrated the whole thing. He started pressuring Ranjit to come to the Dera and apologize to Gurmeet. I think the idea was to record Ranjit's apology and publish it to basically discredit the letter. Ranjit, however, refused because he had nothing to do with the letter whatsoever. By this point, he was completely disillusioned with the Dera and Gurmeet. In fact, he'd been very close to Gurmeet till his sister's incident. Ranjit would often lament about how he had wasted 28 years of his life with the Dera. Gurmeet's lackeys were hounding him to apologize for the letter. He was under 24-hour surveillance. Some Dera members had even come to their house and strip-searched it in an effort to intimidate the family members. They had threatened him multiple times. Ranjit Singh was shot dead on 7 July 2002. And his body was dumped in his own fields. As of now, the hearing in his murder is still going on. And like all of Gurmeet's cases, in this case too, Gurmeet used every trick in the book to delay the trial. He intimidated the witnesses. He applied to have the case transferred to another court. But at least the trial is going on despite these obstacles. Victim 2 was hounded as well. When Gurmeet realized that the CBI was looking to officially record her statement to get the ball rolling on his arrest, he dispatched Dera followers to her house to intimidate her. She had to request for security. There was the additional task of bringing her to court so that her statement could be taken in person. This obviously proved very difficult because Dera members were watching her all the time. They were basically camping outside her home. Her own in-laws, who were members, told her not to make a statement. It got so bad that she and her husband had to move out of their family home. And throughout her fight, she was lucky that her husband was her pillar of support. With the victim under constant surveillance, it was becoming very difficult for the CBI to move forward with the investigation. But thankfully, they got a teeny tiny opportunity. Gurmeet was organizing a major congregation in Haryana. Most Dera members were attending, including the ones on surveillance duty outside this victim's house. It was a small window, but the CBI seized it. They immediately shifted her and her family to a safe house. The Dera members came back to an empty house. Gurmeet used his PR machinery to spread the rumor that the Sadhvi had been abducted. He even filed an FIR with the local police and pressured them to look for her. Dude, this guy, I think basically he wanted her to get caught before she could even record her statement. Meanwhile, victim 2 was laying low in CBI's safe house. After a few days, she was taken to a magistrate in the city of Ambala in Punjab to record her statement. This would prove to be a major breakthrough in this case.
So throughout this case, we have been critical of the role of law enforcement. There is absolutely no doubt that the CBI fucked up many times. The thing is, CBI is a federal agency and it is susceptible to political pressure. And since there was no dearth of political clout as far as Gurmeet was concerned, CBI's investigation hit many roadblocks. Remember, the letter was published in 2002, and if you listen to the letter again, you will see that it was addressed to the Prime Minister of India, who in 2002 was Atal Bihari Vajpayee of the Bharatiya Janata Party, or BJP. When Gurmeet was finally arrested, many BJP members proudly declared that it was their prime minister way back in 2002 who jump-started the investigation against this monster. But the truth is that BJP and Congress also, which is the other major national party in India, sort of share the blame for shielding Gurmeet for a very, very long time. In fact, Dera Sacha Sauda has to be the only religious organization in the country with a dedicated political action wing. Seriously, this was an actual department there. We have already mentioned in part one of the series how political parties wooed the Dera for their votes. BJP deserves absolutely no credit for bringing Gurmeet to justice. Even though the Prime Minister's office knew about the letter, official investigation only began when Punjab and Haryana High Court took suo motu cognizance and ordered CBI to investigate the matter. Even then, the investigation stalled for about 4 to 5 years, again because of political pressure. And it got so bad that CBI had to be reprimanded by Punjab and Haryana High Court for its slow pace of investigation. After this, in 2006, a man named Munjala Narayanan was made the chief investigator in the case. Now, Narayanan was known for his integrity, discipline, and refusal to buck under pressure. You can read in detail about everybody who tried to force him to close the investigation. For example, his own bosses and some members of parliament from Punjab and Haryana in Anurag Tripathi's book. Seriously, it makes for compelling reading. In 2004, India elected a new prime minister, Manmohan Singh. Manmohan Singh was from the Congress party. Manmohan Singh summoned Narayanan to his office to get a sense of the investigation against Gurmeet. He had been told by legislators in his party that the CBI had been harassing Dera members, and this was basically another negative PR campaign by Gurmeet. But to his credit, when Manmohan Singh was shown the evidence the CBI had collected, especially the statements of the rape victims, he was shocked, and he promised the CBI his full support. This was all in 2006-2007, almost 5 years after the Punjab and Haryana High Court had directed the CBI to start investigating. But it would be another 10 years of investigation before Gurmeet's trial would even begin.
Now, let's look at what he's been doing in that 10 years. So, Gurmeet amassed both fortune and quite the reputation in these 10 years. He began his weird film and music career. His movies and songs are unwatchable. And I'm using the nicest word I can use to describe it. Everything is cringy, okay? Like the storyline, dialogues, costumes, songs, everything. It was worse than The Room or Mano's Hands of Fate. Let's not influence your opinion. Here is a small sample of his song, Love Charger. It is in English. So if you can get past the accent, you can understand it. Here's Love Charger.
You are the love charger! You are the love charger!
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically just him belching, "You're the love, sir, sir," over and over and over again. And all his other movies are all along the same lines. Poorly written, poorly produced. In fact, we've put a link to this song's YouTube video on our show notes. Please go watch it. There are at least 50,000 to 1 lakh people there. Is that correct, Aditi? Are my estimations correct?
Probably.
Yeah, man. And they are going wild, okay? Like, I haven't seen people even, you know, react like that to Coldplay or Shakira.
Nope. Not at all. And he's also worked on stage, you know. He's also working it. Like, he has this flowy beard and he has this, you know, curly hair, which is all open. And he's headbanging and everything. And he's all over the stage and he's yelling, "You are the love charger. You are the love charger."
Oh, my God. That reminds me. We have to read out some comments that are there under the YouTube video. And those comments are the gems, okay? So the first comment I'm reading out is by someone called Sean M. And he says, "I'm glad Hagrid went on to have a successful music career after Harry Potter." And someone says, "I played this song in a speaker at home and now there are no cockroaches or rats left." And someone named Pranav says, "My mom came into my room when I was watching this. I immediately changed it to porn so it'd be easier to explain." I'll read out my favorite, okay? This is my morning alarm song. Now I wake up 1 hour before the alarm. And I think I should also read out Aditi's favorite, okay?
Yeah. The social distancing one.
"Social distancing was a joke in my city. But when I played this song in my phone, whenever I go out, people never came within 25 meters. Thank you, Baba."
Oh, also fun fact. I think the song was featured on Jimmy Fallon in his Not To Play feature or something. Like, you can check that. You can Google it. You can Google Gurmeet Baba Ram Rahim plus Jimmy Fallon in YouTube. And I think you'll find the video. It's insane.
Okay. That's a phrase I thought I would never Google in my life.
Yeah.
And
So many amazing independent artists in India. And who gets recognition?
Gurmeet Ram Rahim Singh Insan. Is that the full name? Or was there a saint and doctor somewhere?
Yeah. In his Insta bio, he's Saint Dr. Gurmeet Ram Rahim. It's God.
Okay, man.
I can't with this guy.
This is just too much. And he became a media darling, okay, in these 10 years. The songs and the movies gave him a lot of ridicule. People love to mock him. But I guess any publicity is good publicity. I also remember being horrified by the fact that his movies were running in theaters across the country. And not just his little theater in Sirsa. For fuck's sake, MSG2 had listings in a theater like 2 kilometers away from my house. What the fuck?
Yeah.
And here is the most irritating bit, okay? This man was responsible for killing a journalist. And that is just a murder we know about. Who knows how many people he had killed. He was known for threatening the media every time they carried a negative story on him. Now, a lot of people outside Haryana, Punjab and all didn't even know about his shadier dealings. But it is not possible that media persons sitting in Delhi were ignorant of the same. It is just not possible. But still, they invited him to their chat shows, asked him inane questions, and never really touched on the rape allegations. Makes me so angry. And these interviews were going on till about 2015, as far as we could find. And this guy is so fucking smug and sanctimonious in all these interviews. He keeps talking about how he's very particular about not keeping any vulgar scenes in his movies. Dickhead. And he also brags about how they wrote entire scripts in 2 hours on a flight from Delhi to Hyderabad. What rubbish.
I mean, if you see the movies, that's not a claim that is hard to believe.
Abeo, I don't think the quantum of time they took to write the script matters. He could have been given like 1 or 2 years, it would have been the same shit.
That's true. That's true. So this is a good time to mention the enigma that is Honeypreet Insaan. Honeypreet was Gurmeet's adopted daughter. She is also the only daughter to be in limelight. So if you watch the aforementioned interviews of Gurmeet Ram Rahim, you will often find her sitting next to him, especially when he's promoting one of his movies. She also appears in his movies. In one of them, she is a secret agent or an army commando, I forget which. We'll put up the photo, you can see. Anyway, despite these appearances, she wasn't very well known outside the Dera before 2017. In 2017, she really shot to fame when she was photographed in the chopper with Gurmeet, and this chopper was being used to take him to prison after his conviction in Panchkula. We'll post this photograph also on our Instagram. This is an Augusta Westland chopper, which is normally used to transport VIPs in the government. There was a whole controversy on it. We don't want to go into all of it. Now, since family is not allowed to accompany a convict on their journey to prison, her being on the plane made people very curious and also caused a fair amount of outrage. So, Honeypreet is not her real name. It's Priyanka, but you don't need to remember it. Her family were Dera members as well, and her father was one of the quote-unquote investors in the many Dera factories. The earliest we hear about Honeypreet is from 1999 when her marriage was fixed to a man called Vishwas Gupta, another Dera member. Now, this was a shotgun wedding. They hadn't even heard of each other. But one fine day in February, Gurmeet summoned Vishwas and just randomly told him that he had decided to marry him off to a girl Gurmeet had chosen for him. This was on 12th February. 2 days later, on 14th February 99, they were married. Just like that. I mean, they literally saw each other on the day of their wedding. I kid you not. I mean, I know India has its, like, India has a reputation for arranged marriages. But even in Indian arranged marriage circles, this is super weird. Things, however, were about to get even weirder. So for about 10 years, Honeypreet and Vishwas lived in Sirsa and they visited the Dera ashram often. Now, if you listen to the interviews that Vishwas gave to many reporters, he mentions that Gurmeet's relationship with Honeypreet was always suspicious to him. He recounts many instances where they would visit the Dera and Honeypreet would stay behind for overnight visits and Vishwas would be sent home. So this went on for many years. Then in 2009, Gurmeet announced that he had quote-unquote adopted Honeypreet. So obviously this is a make-believe adoption, which is why Sneha is laughing so badly. Firstly, Honeypreet was a full-grown 28-year-old adult at this time. And secondly, under Indian law, the age difference between the adoptive parent and the child should be 21 years minimum. And here it was about 13 to 14 years. So it seemed like a way for Gurmeet to simply justify Honeypreet's constant presence in his life, even at times when it was not appropriate, or so Vishwas alleges. Vishwas also alleges that he once walked in on her and Gurmeet in an objectionable position in Gurmeet's house on their couch.
Anyway, let's look at Honeypreet's version, okay, where she alleged that Vishwas had started demanding dowry from her parents. So she went to Gurmeet for protection. This is why he adopted her. That just made no sense at all. There was a dowry complaint registered against Vishwas, which was withdrawn after Vishwas apologized for the same. Again, Vishwas alleges that this was only done because Gurmeet had taken possession of his family's property and he was threatening him and his family. Given Gurmeet's shady record, this seems like the probable version, but who can really tell? But the illicit relationship or not, Honeypreet is definitely Gurmeet's favorite. You can in fact access her Twitter and Insta pages. She has an entire website dedicated to her. We will link it in our show notes. She seems just like her quote-unquote Pitaji, a woman of many talents. In 2015, Honeypreet started directing and acting in his movies. I think she played, as Aditi said, she played a secret agent or a commando. See, look, we don't know what she played because we didn't watch the movies. If you want to watch it, you can tell us what she played. On her website, she's also listed as philanthropist and editor as her other jobs. Also, you guys should totally, totally go there and read that website end to end. It is the shit. And okay, here's like a little gem from her website, okay? As a daughter of the King of Kings, your purpose is not to turn heads, but to turn hearts toward our Heavenly Father. She refers to herself as Papa's angel. I'm puking in my mouth again. Ugh. Disgusting. Also, I think she means Gurmeet is her daddy, really. Anyway, jokes aside, Gurmeet's closeness with Honeypreet led many to speculate that she would be his successor. And listing talents in social media bios is not the only trait she has in common with her papa. So we opened the previous episode with a description of riots in Panchkula. The riots were not just limited to Panchkula. The violence spread to Sirsa and other districts all over Punjab, Haryana and Uttar Pradesh. There was a large-scale destruction of property. And 41 was the official death toll. Honeypreet was considered the mastermind of this entire riot. And according to a charge sheet filed by the police, Honeypreet and the 45-membered Dera Management Committee made a plan to unleash violence if Gurmeet Ram Rahim was convicted in the rape case. The conspiracy was hatched at the Dera headquarters in Sirsa in a meeting on August 17, 2017. On the day of Gurmeet's conviction, Honeypreet went into hiding. She, along with 43 other people, remained most wanted in relation to the riots that occurred that day. She eluded the police for 38 days. Wow. During this time, there were rumors that she was sighted in Nepal and sometime in Delhi. On October 3rd, 2017, she gave an exclusive interview to India Today, the news outlet, from an undisclosed location. She claimed to be innocent and that she was simply too helpless a woman to organize any kind of riots. Yeah, right. The journalist asked her why she had been on the run if she had been innocent. She said that she had become depressed at the thought of her beloved papa behind bars for 20 years. So she had simply gone to Delhi. How the police could not track her in Delhi, which was literally right next to Haryana, is beyond Aditi and me. And apparently she escaped the police dragnet 6 times in these 38 days.
Okay, so even though this has been quite a depressing list of crimes Gurmeet was responsible for, and personally it has been a terrible week for us since we researched this, but unbelievably, you have to listen to some more. So, in the previous episode, we talked about Hansraj Chauhan, who had been castrated after being drugged by doctors at Gurmeet's behest. You know, where he made up some shit about divine grace and whatnot. We talked about how Gurmeet had gone to Chauhan's parents and pestered them till they finally sent their young son to Sirsa to live at the Dera full-time. In later years, Gurmeet became obsessed with getting young kids to become Dera members full-time, often away from their parents, completely cut off from their family and relatives. The Dera had its own newspaper in which they published advertisements directed at other members to quote-unquote donate their kids to Dera Sacha Sauda. No shit. He used the word donate. Once again, he spun some yarn about how this would bring good fortune to the parents and the donated kids, blah, blah, blah. You know the routine.
Dude, didn't they already donate like their entire life savings, their father's life savings, their father's ancestral property to the Dera? Why the fuck does he need their kids now?
Yeah, the fleecing doesn't stop. Like, it is an ongoing process. There is no end to the fleecing. So some parents bought into the whole thing. In 2017, a woman named Lalita came forward to report that she too had, quote unquote, donated her 2-month-old kid to the DERA about 12 years back. She had never heard from him or seen her child again. She said she only did this because she was a staunch devotee of the DERA and Gurmeet. There are also reports of a mass grave at the DERA with nearly 600 skeletons buried underneath. This was revealed by a former chairperson of DERA Sacha Sauda. So far, no inquiry has happened on either of these fronts. To sum up, Gurmeet has been tried and convicted in 2017 for 2 counts of rape. He was sentenced to 10 years of imprisonment for both, thus 20 years in total. In 2019, he was also convicted for the murder of Ramchandar Chhatrapati, the first ever journalist to expose him. He is still undergoing trial for the murder of Ranjit Singh. He has been charge-sheeted in a mass castration case, and the doctors who operated on the men have been arrested. This was in 2018. And so far, there has been no headway in the investigation for the murder of Fakir Chand. It was reported that in Panchkula, when the judge declared Gurmeet guilty, he started crying and whining and begged for forgiveness from the judge. And when I heard about this, the only thing that came to my mind were all those women who had been forced to seek forgiveness from Gurmeet all the way back in 1999. The satisfaction was real, you guys, very real. Apparently, he had to be dragged out of court because he refused to leave, weeping about how he did not want to go to jail.
Wow, wow. And there was no shortage of theatrics either. He made a big fuss about how he had high blood pressure and he was unwell. He was given a medical checkup and, of course, was found completely fit. When he had to be escorted out of the court, his private security personnel started fighting with the police. One of them even hit a high-ranking police officer. Kya ho raha hai? What is happening? And while he was being dragged from the court, apparently he cried and yelled, "Koi mujhe bachao!" Basically meant, "Somebody save me, please." And the theatrics continued in prison as well. Apparently he spends his time in prison pacing and lamenting about his life. He tells the authorities not to lock his jail cell because he's too afraid. You know, like a little 5-year-old baby.
Ah, karma.
Okay. So that is the story of this cult and its fucking weird leader. And also concludes our series. While we were able to cover the major crimes Gurmeet did for power, money and sex, there are quite a few small tidbits we had to leave out for the lack of time. I mean, you can make a whole true crime series on this cult. Hey, Netflix, take the hint, man. But in the meantime, we really recommend reading Anurag Tripathi's book. It's Quarantine. Let's be real. For all you know, it might be extended into June. It's not like you guys are really busy anyway. Also, we figured why should we have to suffer alone, right? Anyways.
Yeah, join in our misery.
Yeah. We dropped 2 full episodes this week because we promised we would make it up to you for not dropping an episode last week. We hope you liked this series. Thank you so much for listening and engaging with us. It means the world to us. Once again, there were a few Hindi words, a little legal jargon in this episode as well. And we've tried our level best to explain it. But if there's any confusion at all, do write in, guys, and we will clarify all your doubts. Please keep this interactive, y'all. We'll see you next week with a whole brand new episode. Till then, stay safe, stay sane, and belated happy Eid, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.